Now the question is, are we live or not? Okay. What time did we record that applause? We're live. Now don't you go anywhere. I have to address some very serious and important things with my congregation. Last time I got the report, 231 reservations for Sunday night Shalom service were no-shows. Now, some few I can explain, like 10 maybe, that were voices of faith who were not sure that they were going to be assigned to answer phones here, and they made the reservations. One of them is an ex-staff member, another subject now, that is typical of some. He made a reservation. He's an ex-staff member. He has one never-changing problem. He's either hard of hearing or he goes into various stupors where he can only hear some language that no man on earth speaks. Because I can't believe there's anybody in my congregation or who has ever worked for me that doesn't know, and I'm getting less and less tolerant of this. I don't like excuses. I don't care if you've got a right excuse. I don't want to hear it unless I give you permission to go into a long rhetorical speech of defense. You made a reservation. You didn't show. And there was no message here of explanation. We had to chase this staff member down and say, what are you doing making a reservation? That's a promise to your pastor and to God. And you didn't show. Well, ring around the rosies with nothing excuses. And finally, he does a great cleansing act. Well, the truth is, I think he drove somewhere that takes him at least 30, 40 minutes to get here, maybe longer. The truth is, I got there and I was late and I thought it would be too late to come in. Well, I said, don't worry about it anymore when I found out. He didn't give it to me, but he knew that the staff member calling him was calling for me. Is there anybody in here that doesn't know? Don't try excuses on me. Anybody in here don't understand that? Do all of you understand that?
Yes, sir.
And what excuses? All it is injecting self-protection into a self-dying, supposed to be, relationship. Well, let's say that. And it's the next staff member. Let's say, some of you newer members of the sheep herd may need a little conditioning. Not the old timers. That's why he doesn't work here anymore. He couldn't stop making excuses. So when I got the report, I told him until he finds me personally, and apologizes not for the fact that he didn't come, that's bad enough, but the sin that Jesus could attribute to the spirit's willing but the flesh is weak becomes evil. It becomes evil when you start trying to justify it. There's no way this person didn't know. I'm letting people in late. When have I not let people in late? Anybody seen me stop that recently? I think we've never had a shalom service where at the cathedral, the message is the most important part of the service. At the shalom service, going to the table of the Lord is the most important part of the service. I prepare you for it, but that's why we're having the service. And last time I checked, I do not remember ever going to the table of the Lord first at 7 o'clock. It's the last event. Always, of course, I always watch faces and turn on my radar of spiritual discernment, see if I can pick up sympathy on the part of anybody because somebody is guilty of the thing that all of us are guilty of at certain times. God has to judge me when I do it. You're my charge. You make excuses somewhere else. 168 hours in a week. You make all excuses you want somewhere else. Between you and God and whoever will believe your BS. In this work, my business is to stop you elevating yourself. Stop you from serving yourself. Can't change you any more than God could change the Israelites. But I can sure nail you when you do it. God has to change you. You don't cater to your sin. God didn't cater to sin. He bore his own body eventually. That's why he had to wall himself away. So I let him know he'll find me. He will apologize without excuses for making excuses. Or find another church. Huh? Yeah. I'll get to some more of you, too. You don't make promises to me and to God and treat it like, I'll make a reservation just in case I want to go. Everybody makes reservations and circumstances make it impossible. That's what these phone lines are for. You call and erase your reservation and explain why. Some of the reservations were for hoped-for guests who copped out on you. And you made a reservation for you and a guest, and only you showed up and the guest didn't. You had duty to call the phone and say, my guest is not coming. Of course, there's no one of you, it seems like, has the faith to believe that there will ever be a shalom service where there are no seats. I remember a time when we couldn't find seats in the King's House One when people sat on the platform while I preached, sat on, down there on the steps. You made a reservation. If you're not going to be there or your guest doesn't show, get yourself a cell phone and call the Voice of Faith on the way. I checked all the messages before I let my wrath loose. 231. We went through this once before. And those who saw my face, I almost walked out, but then I said, no, I'm going to finish for those that are here. And it's a good thing I did. I'm not one of those that exploits. But as we were singing the closing song, I kept seeing a lady who's a regular, not a stranger, waving her, one of those wraparound canes that you have to fasten around your legs to function. Whatever the cane was, and I'm seeing waving in the air. She came so full of pain she could hardly walk. And she apparently listened to my message on Sunday morning. But she sort of approached God vociferously as we were praying and going to the table of the Lord and singing. She said, God, I'm one of the 300. And I'm not going to be one of the 300 incapacitated. And she'd gone to the doctor and she had some severe disc problems in her back. And as she tells it, because we called her afterwards, She felt a warmth go through her back and felt like bubbles were running up and down her spine. She came on the crutches or whatever you call those things, and she went out carrying them, rejoicing. So I'm glad I didn't walk out. It's a disgrace that you would treat that sacred event where we remember the Lord's death and the appointment He kept for you and the word that He kept to His Father in the councils of heaven. And you would make reservations and not have the courtesy to call and say, I can't make it, whatever the reason. And then I would have an ex-staff member that I can tell you, he wouldn't have tried that excuse if I'd been on the phone. It always amazes me at what some people will do when they're dealing with somebody that's on my staff that they feel a little more horizontal relationship with, or in some cases, that they formerly were superior to. He'd been looking for new eardrums if I'd been on the phone. And he won't come to the church again until he apologizes for the excuse-making he tried on another faithful staff member that was making the call on my behalf. There was only one answer. I'm an asshole. What kind of... I thought I was there too late, okay? Why didn't he come over here to the studio and answer phones? He apparently got in his car and drove for 30, 45 minutes. Made a stupid decision that he was too late to get in the service. Well, why didn't he come to the studio and answer phones? Well, give me this non-committed excuse-making BS. This isn't a new person that still needs some training. This is a person who's had a continuing problem. Can't take correction without giving some excuse. I know there are lots of churches in town. Pastor, I haven't got the guts to correct you. These are shepherds that run if the wolf attacked the band. I give account for you at the judgment seat of Christ. I take that seriously. If you don't want a pastor like that, get out. I don't even have to work at being fair. I'd have made one of the best referees alive. It comes natural to me. And discernment usually sees through who's to blame for what. No shows. That's a sin. That calls for repentance, not excuse making. How many years have I been saying you get out of the foxhole as though the whole war depends upon you? You know, I went Sunday night, my wife and I both, but I was the speaker. I had prayed and studied all afternoon. Took us to my psalm. I came, never at any service did I expect God to move on the scene and work miracles more than Sunday night. There is still hanging on the wall, marked on God's calendar, the prophecy of Clara Grace, so much of it fulfilled that God would bring me out of the valley at that time. I pay no attention to personal prophecy that seeks to add something to God's word or is contradicted by God's word. if it doesn't contradict God's word, you have a proven saint as Clara Grace was, noted across America for her teaching ability and a unique prophetic touch. And I've told the story how I had come to a breaking point and got a call to preach in Melody Land as Wilkerson went to London. Went down and preached that Sunday. And I knew about Clara Grace. She built the adult Bible class at Melody Land, and I'd first met her briefly at Central Assembly in Tulsa, Oklahoma, when she was part of several of us that were speaking at a special convention. But I didn't know her, but I knew her reputation. And I knew that in her senior years, she had provided the iron foundation with her great Bible teaching, the adult class at Melody Land. I could see she was agitated while I was preaching, but the minute the message was over and I stepped down to go through the side door to the pastor's office, she grabbed my arm and said, "Dr. Scott, I've got to talk to you." Well, I wasn't going to say no to her with her stature in the church. And we went in the office and she began to cry and say, as you were speaking, it was as though a television screen dropped down. They had a large pulpit like they used to have, pulpit like they used to have at King's House One. Just as though a television screen just formed on the front of the pulpit. And I saw these things. And I've got to tell you. The first thing she proceeded to say, "You've been going through a valley. God has allowed you to be tested." And she told me details that no one knew. My love of my father would not have let me tell anybody. But in helping my dad, he had made a business mistake and had gotten us into a jam by signing away a performance bond on the church that I had put my name on to help finance the building of it. We had run out of options. Bankruptcy and shame was imminent. The contractor had left town, and I had come to a breaking point and had sat by outside by the pool and a motel in Fresno where I just closed a meeting. And never had I known how to quit or give up, but I gave up. And it's too long a story to tell, because I had prayed a prayer after reading Resal Intercessor in Springfield, Missouri, that God would break me whatever it took. God never had anybody that would work harder to do his work than me, but if God didn't do it, I'd do it for him. And I saw that Jacob nature and asked God to break me, and he did. And he did through a mistake my dad made. Almost killed my dad when he realized what he'd done, because, again, I was smart enough that I always had, figuratively speaking, the insurance policy in my pocket that if God didn't come through, I'd bail him out. By a stroke of a pen and a phone call when I was preaching in Flint, Michigan, I learned what had happened. And he had been conned by a contractor and another preacher talking in tongues and saying the performance bond wasn't needed. And for 3 long years, we had fought the fight and could no longer revolve the loans. Well, I won't go in debt ever again. Wouldn't have been. Don't need to tell you the whole story, but my dad was embarrassed and brokenhearted. And God used my father to get me in a spot that I would have not gotten myself in, and it broke me. And I don't know how to say it, because I never knew how to give up, but I sat out by that pool and said to God, "I give up." I went to preach. And Clara Grace told me all of that. That something my father had done. Nobody knew that. And hardhead that I am, she could not have gotten my attention, because I've been approached by these prophets that are telling me what God told them I should do throughout much of my ministry. And I always say to them, well, if you've got that close a relationship with God, why don't you tell him to tell me? I don't need you to tell me. Claire Grace was different. I knew who and what she was. And when she began to tell me details that nobody knew, she had my attention. She said, God let you go through this to see if you would depart from your word-based ministry. And in those years, teachers were not very popular. This was the Voice of Healing days, and evangelists were what was popular. I was a pioneer with teaching ministry in the churches. There were others like John Wright Follett, whom I hadn't met and didn't know, but would go to motels, and people who knew of his teaching would gather there, an independent ministry. But when she told me that, she had my attention. God has tested you, and he showed me five things. It may get worse, but you will come out of this valley. I don't know how soon or how long, but you'll come out of the valley. The valley was financial. And I was using everything I had to roll the loans over. March of that year, March 1st, I'd been noticed, or coming March, I'd been noticed the bank would not roll it over anymore. I won't finish the prophecy. I came out of the valley. February 28th. The very same man that you'd heard me say was a junior teacher in my dad's church where I grew up years ago. And when I took over the Sunday school, he told me I couldn't get any teacher to do what I was saying, because I said it's morally wrong for teachers to teach these kids without this kind of commitment. He said, you haven't got anybody but me. I said, oh, yes, I do. Who you got? I said, you're looking at him. I'll teach the whole church from nursery to adults. Well, this is going to be the commitment. And I fired him. He was a rich scion of the charter member mother that helped found the church many years earlier. Problem. Last man in the world I would expect to do this. February 28th, walked in and wrote a check for $100,000. I look back now and think how small that is in relationship to our current needs. But in those days, what was killing us was a $47,000 debt of contractor's bills that had been left in the city when he left town. God doubled it. I told you the story. I wept, almost ran into parked cars driving home to tell my dad we'd come out of the valley. It started to rain blessing. A man I'd never met. The local banker that had known me for years and knew my integrity said there was a person that had made lots of investments in the speculation of the big Oroville Dam that was wanting some advice. And I met with him. His name was Hugh O'Neill. He had a major architectural firm, interestingly enough, in Berkeley, and we didn't have the mausoleum yet. And he was the man who had built the wings in the Berkeley mausoleum. And in later years, to get ahead of the story, we used him again to build the wing that we put on the mausoleum. But that time I didn't know him. We introduced by the banker. He ended up giving a shopping center that I sold for well over $250,000 to the church, and it just started pouring in. I couldn't even keep up with the blessings. I came out of the valley. But at the time of Claire Grace's prophecy, I was grabbed because she told me the problem and how it occurred. She said, that's the first thing God showed me. You'll come out of the valley. You've been tested. You've continued to teach the word. And you've come through, and God's going to bring you out of the valley. Second, she says, you're going to come to a permanent place. You're going to come to a place from which you will never move again. Now, I had set up headquarters in Washington, D.C., Tulsa, Oklahoma, Springfield, Missouri, Portland, Oregon. I was on the road all the time. She said, you'll come to a permanent place from which you won't move again. And she described it as, it'll be like a, and she tried to say it in pictorial terms, a marble pillar that will support a vast canopy. And from that place, third, she said, God's going to take your voice. And in these last days, there's going to be a revival outpouring. And many tangential voices are going to raise up that will lead people astray. And God's going to take your voice and take it worldwide. I couldn't conceive that then. I mean, I'm traveling around the world, but He's going to take your voice and make it worldwide. This was in the 60s. I wasn't on a radio station. I wasn't anywhere. I was just traveling. He's going to take your voice and make it worldwide as a steering voice in these last days, to which people will look like a compass point and get direction because it's rooted, founded, and based on God's Word. Fourth, because these tangential voices are able to lead people astray because of miracles attached to their ministry. I tuned in on that because the false prophet in the last days will get people to bow down to Antichrist with miracles. She says there'll be so many tangential voices leading people astray and justifying their ministry with miracles. God is going to add miracles to your ministry to counterbalance that attention, because you as a compass point will keep them rooted on the Word. Last, five, there will come a note of joy in your ministry that's never been there before. Well, you could have picked me up off the floor. The test of personal prophecy is it comes to pass. She had my attention because she told me details I didn't know. And I went home, and it got worse. Until February 28th, the day before the end would have come, when that one check brought us out of the valley. That's why that little church in Oroville still stands there as a testimony to that miracle. Well, I thought, I mean, the blessings came so fast, I was around the world. Everybody was calling on me, to research director of the Committee on Advance for the Assemblies of God, because they didn't have to pay anything. God had poured so much money in, I paid my own bill. Sent by Tom Zimmerman around the world as a front runner to his dream, which was to form a worldwide Assembly of God. And I quote him exactly. He said, Gene, our missionary work has produced the Pentecostal Fellowship worldwide, and the nuts are running it. And the people of the world have more respect for education than they do here in the United States. And I was one of five people called to every single national or district-wide convention every time. It suddenly dawned on me after a few years of that I was voicing and hadn't come to a place. So in 1 week, I canceled 47, I think it was, national and worldwide conventions. I mean, I've already told you, 11,000 people at the Kiel Auditorium in St. Louis, four times to the largest gathering in Australia. I said, the devil couldn't stop it happening. He'd got the cart for the horse. I'm voicing without a base. But I didn't have anywhere else at that time to go, so I canceled the all these conventions and went to Orville. Went back there because I had a base. 5 years, I thought, maybe that's it. I remember writing an article that, like George Mueller, he said, if it does it in Bristol, it's God. If God does it from Orville, it's God. Then God swept me to San Francisco with Dolores Press and Sunset Mausoleum. And I thought, that'd be the base. Then I was called as a financial consultant to Faith Center and got elected pastor. And I thought that was the base. And the old timers will remember many times we tried to go nationwide. It didn't work from there. And then I thought it was Hope Street. And then God took us to the cathedral. The ones that are part of the history know, within 2 months of moving to the cathedral, the door opened for Anguilla, and that became Secret Six in a battle with the devil. And while we were battling Secret Six, God took us around the world in less than 2 months. Now we had the earnest of our inheritance. We've had miracles, including my own miraculous healing. But I felt when I started the Shalom services that the church was ready for stage four, that miracles would come. I don't know where you are as a congregation. It's obvious you don't expect miracles at the Shalom service or you'd be there. You don't expect it or you'd be there. Don't give me this that I brought the communion into your home and miracles happen in your home all the time. That's not what Clara Grace prophesied. A counterbalance to the sideshows with the tangential ministries that are corrupting the stream of the church all across America. God let us change the whole scope of Christianity by almost completely eradicating what was the common denominator before we started doing it on television, of making the table of the Lord a place of guilt and condemnation instead of a place of grace and faith. But there's a phase we've had it. In part, miracles are reported here all the time. You're becoming an onlooker again, like those that didn't participate in the fountain of faith. You don't come recognizing that you have to get out of your foxhole. As Joshua fought in the valley and Aaron and Hur ran up the hill to hold Moses' arms up. You are the lucky ones that participate in the place from which the next phase will come. God's always working miracles. But to counterbalance the tangential voices, that's part of the prophecy. The joy? I am convinced that my wife Melissa is that joy that has never been there, but her joy and mine cannot be complete. And she's come under the burden as strongly as I am. Our joy cannot be complete until this congregation wakes up and begins to understand the privilege and the part that God has given you to be for Him the support system for what God has prophesied through Clara Grace to happen through this ministry. You let me down, you let God down. But it gets worse. I want to show you something. The test of a prophet is what they say comes true. That was the way I walked out of that office at Melody Land. She had my attention because she knew things that only God could have shown her. Then when I came out of the valley one day before the end, twice what was needed, and the blessings started flowing in. That got my attention at another level. And when my choices of the place turned out not to be the case, and God put His stamp on the place, as difficult as it's been for us downtown, and took us worldwide, miraculously. A call in the middle of the night and a 5-minute decision opened up the Beacon in Anguilla. The wall goes down in Russia. We're there on those giant transmitters. You can't statistically try to make prophecy come true. I did. I mean, I started voicing before I found a base. I picked 1, 2, 3, 4 bases before the 5th one. God put His stamp on at the cathedral. Some of you are like sleepwalkers. You don't even open your eyes to see what you're a part of. You don't even understand the judgment seat of Christ and what it'll be like over there when you stand hand in hand with me and every person who is making this happen to receive the rewards eternal and hear Him say to you, when all you do is make a reservation and keep your word and pay your tithe and fill the seat and volunteer a portion of your time to be arms and legs to this ministry, to hear Him say, well done, good and faithful servant. Where there's no vision, the people perish. I got to be a fool to not believe that 3 out of 5, the other 2, are on the horizon. And we've got a taste of both. The miracles that are happening and my joy. Our joy is interrupted night after night with excuse-making staff members, with people who make commitments and won't keep them, with people that just seemingly can't see spiritual and see that we wrestle not against flesh and blood, but against these forces of the demonic hierarchy that do not want to see. They heard the prophecy too. They don't want this to happen. And with high hopes, I went there Sunday night, and when we got there, we didn't play it live. So some of you listening need to see this. I'm going to play just a short segment before I tell you how it got worse on Sunday night, and some of you were not even in the battle there. You got that tape ready of the song Sunday night? Melissa began to sing, and then I interrupted it to add something. I want to play that. Let it go. Standing, but wait a minute. I want these two ladies right there. Come on, stand beside my wife. Right here. You two right there. You're both near your husbands. Come on up here. Come up the steps. Come on up here. One of you on each side of them, keep their hands free. I want them to show the congregation. They don't have to have a microphone. You're going to sing. They can sing with you. But I want them to show the congregation what they ought to be doing. Just a happy day part. Let's go with happy day. Do what you were doing down there. Now let the husband come up and stand beside the wife. Now,
guys go.
Was a ruach. Remember, I preached that this morning. Now, there will be four people that will be sympathizing with me under these lights while I conduct the rest of this service. You may take your seats and thank you very much. I went on to point to these two couples, saying and making a big deal out of how hot it was. I don't think in all my years of preaching, the only thing I can compare it to is when I preached in the heat of Bombay during the hottest season, in the slums of Bombay, in a tar paper shack church in Bombay, India. Maybe one other time in Manila. I wasn't sure I was going to make it through the message. All the life was taken out of the congregation. The heat was unbearable. It must have been 110, 15, or 20 on the platform. I commented to the couple, and you didn't hear the rest of the exchange, that they agreed they would sympathize because of what they had just gone through in the heat. I had to stop people from fanning because of the distraction, humorously saying, just stop fanning because I'm hotter than them. And at 75, I'm not supposed to be able to bear heat like younger people. I said, if they passed out from the heat, I'd anoint them with oil, raise them up until they could get hot again. I loaded the whole service with comments. Then I did something that I seldom do. It's not some thoughtless act that I never raise money for projects. The minute you do, you open the door for a government agency to say, we're going to come in to see if all the money was spent on that project. I assumed that the air conditioning was gone. We've had trouble with it. We've brought air conditioning people. But I assumed that we had no air conditioning. And I made a comment that I wish I could withdraw, that as part of this shoring up the ministry on all places, the same air conditioning unit's been there at Faith Center for the 30 years I've been here. And as part of 16, we're going to have to see about air conditioning King's House 1. And then I poked fun and said, you're going to bear the heat to the end because it'll be the last thing we do, just so you'll want it desperately. There's no one that was there that would not honestly have to admit the life we normally feel and the joy of the core of our church goes to King's House 1. There's always life in that service. And I had to get up with a crowd that was turning to perspiration puddles and try to inspire and preach and take us to the table of the Lord when I wasn't sure that I could make it through the message. Now, those of you that were there, weren't there enough hints to know we got an air conditioning need? Well, you can imagine how I felt when on the way home, calling to have people check to see what the problem was, I'm told that the man that we now rotate directors because there's something about being a director that feeds people's ego until they think they're the hot dog of the ministry. So we rotate them. the man that was directing. 7:10. Though we were there at 6:30, moving around the truck, my wife was there available until 7:10, and we were getting radio messages from the director every 10 minutes, 5 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. When my wife had spent the entire afternoon there, dotting every I, crossing every T, getting on to people for leaving the door open, turning the lights out, air conditioning on, to keep the building cool, at 7:10, the director turned the air conditioning off. Just turned it off. Two other staff members knew about it and did nothing. All three of them heard. And when I was 12 years old, if I heard the cues that I threw out, if I was going to lose my arm, I would have gone and turned the air conditioning on. The director said he never even thought of it until on the way home when we called, found out he had done it. Why did you do that? Last April, when the temperature was 65, we had him turn the air conditioning off because it is a little bit noisy. How many of you remember that? A one-time exception, because it's 65 degrees, you don't need it. If it were a standard part of the checklist, turn the air conditioning off every time we have a service, it would be on the checklist. You don't have to be a rocket scientist to figure that out. The presumption sign, you know, it doesn't matter how many times we change the bodies that are on staff. Same demons are here, but they don't believe it. There is no way that in 30 years the diversity of race, education, age, and personality could come and go to work for a few months and not wear the armor of God and try to do it in their own strength. It's as though they become duplicate clone personalities of the same demon tendencies of excuse-making, avoiding the light. I can do it in my strength. Can't take correction. And presumption no longer applies to them. Deliberately turned it off. Well, now that's bad enough. I could write that down to a stupid move. Even though my wife spent the afternoon there, and everybody on staff knows she's a detailist, and all they had to do is ask, "Do you want the air conditioning off tonight?" But if I can forgive that stupidity, I can't forgive the obtuseness of seeing me bleed openly on the platform, try to make excuses for the heat, and suffer to the point I almost couldn't make it through the message, and not go flip the switch. I would have heard it go on. I probably would have had to stand and do an applause. I say it and nobody believes me. We wrestle not against flesh and blood. The devil didn't want that service. He kept a lot of you home. The devil didn't want the miracle phase to start. I cannot explain. The director's a good man. The other two staff members are good people. But they live in a state, "Oh, we did this in April. We might get in trouble if we don't do it now, and we will not ask. Oh, I've done it, and I dare not move now." I mean, we can't move while he's preaching. He's having a heart attack and falling on the platform, so we just leave him there because we can't move while he's preaching. Nobody can be that stupid. The devil has to take control. You know how long it will be? Each time, I want to tell you something. Each time we've had a miracle service, shalom service, since I started them, we must be somewhere between 15 and 20. The crowd has gotten smaller each time. The same people that rejoiced to go downtown, that we had to, those balconies weren't there when I came here. They were covered up. We burst the seams of King's House 1. Used to have to go to places like Kingdom of Dancing Stallion in Orange County or the Shrine Auditorium for Freedom Sunday or Special Days. What's the matter with you? If you resist the devil, he'll flee from you. There is no hopes for this church arriving at what God intends us to arrive at until you recognize who the enemy is in your own life and in your own work and start resisting him and putting God first. There's no resurrection without a cross in front of it. There's no eternal life until death to your self-centered life. He that saveth his life, that's what some of you did Sunday night, shall lose it. The devil wants me to say, I won't have another shalom service. The devil wants the same thing that has defeated this ministry for 30 years. Failure of the volunteers to keep their commitments on these phones. Failure on the part of you that have made commitments to work at least one night a week on the other end out there, calling in to keep faith in this room. Failure to respond to a Savior who died for you and give Him at least 50 weeks out of the year, allowing 2 weeks for you to take vacations on occasion. Failure to realize who's defeated when you make your reservations on Sunday for the following Sunday instead of putting it off until you can convince yourself it's convenient for you to come. Failure to keep the commitments that you've made. Can't please God. Can't do anything for yourself. He that saveth his life shall lose it. He that loseth his life for my sake and the gospel shall gain it unto life eternal. Will I cancel the shalom services? No, that's not my way. I'll go back and hit the devil again. But where are you going to be? I've been preaching the praise messages, including Zakar, praise on remembrance. You ought to trek to King's House 1 to make yourself remember. As you go by that fountain of faith, where this ministry was 30 years ago as Satan had virtually brought it to annihilation. You ought to go there to remember what it was and what God has given us as a place to send this message forth to the world at the cathedral. I haven't slacked off. You have. You're not with me. And if you're not for me, you're against me. what Jesus said. Some of you have made commitments to God. You've reneged on them. You've let the devil become the echo inside your head. I failed. I can't do it. Well, Peter failed too. God let him preach on the day of Pentecost. Time to pick yourself up as saints and dust yourself off and say, I haven't come this far to quit. My pastor didn't quit. I can tell you, our administrative pastor, my wife won't quit. And we're going to have another Shalom service. But recognize the temporary victory that Satan was allowed to have because you weren't in the trenches. And will I forgive those staff members? Yeah, I haven't fired them. But somewhere, some of these people have got to be resurrected as Jacob was, trying to do it in your own strength. It wasn't until God crippled Jacob. And I still marvel. I read that story and I still can't believe it. He wrestled the angel of God to a draw. That heel catcher, everything that he set out to do, God wanted done. But he was determined to do it for God. You never met me here. The years of ministry when I covered the world with that same dedication. I would do it if it killed me. God had to bring me to total failure and break up inside before the prophecy of Claire Grace. It's a compliment and flattery that I've had staff people come that want to be little Gene Scotts. I grieve because I shield them from the breaking that they're going to have before they can become a proper channel for God. It wasn't until Jacob was reduced to... He wrestled to a draw. And then the sun's coming up and the angel has to cripple him. Then he just hangs on. And became a prince that had power with God, walking with a limp. It may not be obvious, but I came here walking with a limp. Taking on the impossible. Because I knew God could do it, and God knew I was willing to fail for the first time in my life to give all that I could to make it possible for God to do it. And He did. Don't be ashamed of yourself. Some of you have listened for 30 years and haven't learned a thing. Life is more than down here. And none of you have a certainty of tomorrow. Only what's done for God will last. Now it's phone time. I want some apologies from those who made reservations and copped out and didn't show the courtesy of calling with an explanation of your absence. And I want some renewed commitments. We still need about 150 more reservations for Sunday. We still need Secret 16 to go up. And we still need you volunteers that are starting to have second thoughts to get your eyes on Jesus and say, Lord, save me. and keep marching on. Now get on the phone and start talking to me. When I talk for an hour and 10 minutes, you're going to talk for the next 20 minutes. Get on the telephone. Whenever somebody says, I need to beg Pastor forgiveness Sunday, I just stayed on the phone as a voice of faith instead of going to the King's house. No, I already exempted those that were here as voices of faith. You were working here and we needed you here. We always suffer when we have the Shalom service with not enough voices of faith to take all the reservations. So you don't owe me an apology if you stayed here as a voice of faith. I already said those people who weren't sure they would be assigned to be voices of faith, you should have made your reservations and your absence understandable. We got a list of who was here as a voice of faith. But other apologies are coming in that need to be made, so just keep it up. As I said earlier, we have the earnest or part payment of stages 4 and 5. I have a joy I never had before with a helpmate that shares my ministry. Never had that before. Who cares as much as I care. Who lives and prays and works to see God's promises in this ministry fulfilled. We've had miracles. I mean, you've had abundant opportunities as a congregation to see, starting with the miracle healing of your pastor from the prostate cancer. I don't look sick. I don't have any symptoms. This October will be the 4th year. I didn't take surgery. I didn't take radiation. I don't take any pills. I don't have any symptoms. I'm healed. The devil may get me with something else, but not with that. It looks like you'd have your eyes open to a miracle and reports of miracles that keep coming in here. God's going to do it. But you're part of it. You're not going to do it if you continue to be no-shows and non-believers. It's your opportunity as well as mine. I mean, did it even register to you that when Benny Hinn's father-in-law was dying, dying of cancer in Orlando, he called me to fly in and take communion and pray for his father-in-law? His father-in-law was healed. Then I hear some weeks later, his wife on television at some big service saying that she and her husband had him take communion and God healed him. Well, those are the obvious acts of God waiting for this congregation to wake up when the miracles will be so obvious that the enemies and the tangential ones and the copycats and the plagiarizers and the thieves will no longer be able to say, well, he's a good teacher, but he smokes a cigar, and try to suppress the voice that is the steering voice for the world. You know, it's terrible to be plagiarized by everybody, but I must be steering people who continue to repeat all my messages. I mean, you know, they don't have to study. They just turn on TV and listen to me. And as long as they keep their people from listening to me, their people don't know where they got the message. Thank God gave it to them. Well, he did, through me. But, you know, why don't you wake up? Why don't you wake up? Come to the defense of God and what he's doing by being a part of it. Some of you hunker down. Some of you have not made any effort to bring anybody to the cathedral years. I still remember what a disgrace when I asked the congregation 1 year to join me in Operation Andrew. Well, now, look around the congregation and ask yourself, how many since that year? Expanding it past the year to the years that have followed. How many people are in this congregation that you went out and your enthusiasm brought them here? I don't want anybody going out and doing the usual kind of witnessing, running to a parking lot and saying, have you been born again? I'll guarantee some of you have convinced some friend of yours to go see a movie or to go to a restaurant by your enthusiasm or something else that you enjoyed and did and were able to, with your enthusiasm, get somebody to go see that picture or go to that restaurant or go to this place or do that. You don't even think about it. No, I'm tired of running into people that say that crazy man. Well, knock them down and go to somebody else. Yes, you know, send them to the dentist. What's the matter with you? You got the gonads of a chipmunk. Huh. This poor woman at Samaria went out and brought half the town. Enthusiasm's contagious. Oh, some new song hits the airways. Did you hear this song? These bunch of chickens. Self-satisfied chickens. I mean, what kind of pervert you want for a pastor that produces the sheep? Sheep produce sheep. I herd them. And feed them. I don't have any friends. Oh, get off of it. You got such a sorry personality that you're afraid to tell people anywhere that you go for fear they'll become like you. Man! I mean, I'm getting some of the most wonderful responses to Sunday's message. Am I the only person you're telling? You know, the encouragement, the flattery sounds good. Who else have you told? I mean, people saying here, that message was the greatest message, hit them where they were, greatest message they've ever heard. It was right where they live, in the land of the living. Who else did you tell? You don't start with your relatives. You can't win a relative to God. Thank God you're getting away from the relatives when you come to the cathedral. Man, I just heard the greatest thing I ever heard in my life. What? Well, you're on a, it's indescribable. You got to come and hear it. You want to go with me? Oh, some of you, you give me the impression that I got a congregation of people that break wind everywhere they go until people stay away from them. Or your breath's so bad the flies die in the room when you walk in. Don't give me this that you can't influence somebody. You got to see it as your mission. That's why you, some of you are forgetting that's what purposed the Romans letter to the Christians at Rome. He wanted them to understand that God's looking for hearers of the word, and the wonderful good news that they were to become the relay stations to find other hearers of the word. Oh, I know, you take my orders and my rules and you use them against me. You're not supposed to get in long-winded conversations. You're not get into theological discussions. But I wonder how long it's been since a voice of faith with real enthusiasm, when somebody calls and says, "This is." I should read some of the messages where people are calling. See what this says. I'm watching this the first time. Dr. Scott's very interesting, very intelligent lecture. I'm a little bit deaf, so could you send me the literature? Really, his teaching is interesting. Things about faith. He uses the Greek and the Hebrew. I've lived many years, but my mind's still good. I'm still searching for truth. Thank you for this. I quit listening to the news. I think everyone should listen to Doc Scott. I wonder if a voice of faith has ever said, "It ain't half as good when you listen on television as it is if you come to the cathedral. Why don't you come to the cathedral? You can be my guest." No. You know, for me, you know, they might come get disappointed and want to kill me. Fullerton. That ain't very far from the cathedral. I want to tell Dr. Scott that I've been listening for 50 minutes and I've never heard the gospel preached so perfectly. He's so amazing. Dr. Scott's awesome. Well, if you think that's as good, it ain't nothing like being at the cathedral. You don't have any enthusiasm. Dr. Scott's lying. Now, I'm sure I'll turn loose some of you to turn into preachers on the telephone. Get a little common sense. My wife just brought me this one. See what it says. Menlo Park. That's not that far from San Francisco. I agree with Pastor Scott. We're a society of moronic squirrels. It runs rampant with ignorance. When he speaks, I wish he could be a human sponge. Thank Dr. Scott for being the man he is, and his father as well. Well, you know, it's only 7.5 hours from San Francisco. Why don't you come down one of these Sundays to the cathedral? I mean, you don't have, you got personality of a fish? I mean, I don't want some telephone marketers, and I don't want you opening it if somebody calls and says, "Can I have a piece of literature?" Well, you know, let them open it. But if they're just pouring out their heart of how much it means to them, you ever tell them, "Well, we have a bus from your area. Why don't you come to the cathedral? Nobody will bite you." Why don't you tell them how hard it was for you to go the first time? And how wonderful it's been. Well, saying, "I'm fascinated with the teaching on all the languages." He's a wealth of information. Well, it's better if you're present. Is there any of you that thinks that you get more out of... Is it better to watch TV than to be there in the live service?
No, sir.
Well, why the hell don't you tell somebody that?
Yes, sir.
Burbank, I love his teaching in his show. Finally, someone on TV who's teaching the truth. Well, do you have any idea how much it would encourage him if you'd make a reservation and come to the cathedral? Now, that really makes you lose your teeth to say, doesn't it? I'm too timid to say something like that. Well, practice. Fullerton, my name is, and I want to tell Dr. Scott how much I appreciate the meat that he covers in his messages. I've been watching for about a month now. Well, you have no idea how much better it is because we edit some of it down. We've got to cut the service down to an hour. You come for 2 hours, and it's twice as good. You guys, some of you, could not sell snow to people in the Sahara Desert. Orange, the message really spoke to me, not at King's House. I've watched a couple of times before, but this message really hit me where I'm at. I'm going to check out your website. I'm looking forward to attending the service this Sunday. Well, hooray, hooray, he made that decision himself. Can I get tickets to see Dr. Scott? How many you want? Los Angeles, I was listening to the program. I've been watching for the past 3 nights. Well, I'll tell you, if you ever come to the cathedral, you'll never want to miss a service again. Don't tell me that you don't have something in your life that you can enthuse people about. Some of you try to sell your bratty kids more than you sell God. They tear the place up. You think, "Ain't they cute?" and there's somebody sitting at the table that's having their meal ruined by your kids, and they have to say, yeah, they're really the cutest thing they ever saw.
God, I wish they'd beat the crap out of them.
You make me sick. You have a responsibility. Don't be offensive. You'd say, oh, no, I go to another church. Well, they could spare you one Sunday. They could spare you one Sunday. I mean, the other church, we teach you, you're getting the teaching every night. You have no idea how wonderful it would be if you just come. No problem. You write a note to the pastor and say, I go to another church, but I'm going to come at least once and encourage you at the cathedral. I may not want to go back to their church. Wake up, folks. Oh, you just love it. When I do all the talking, you have to work. Get on the telephone. I don't know why, but all of you aren't lined up. Particularly you Voices of Faith and you 300 volunteers. I don't know why that you're not lined up. There's a guy, very faithful, one of the most faithful people. He works on a job. He goes around and services machines. I don't want to say what kind of machine, but they're everywhere, because I would identify him. I don't know why he hasn't got 20 or 30 pulpits that he's leaving in a convenient place everywhere he stops. I don't know how many times you go into a Starbucks or a Coffee Bean or a coffee shop or a restaurant. You can't just manage to forget a pulpit, that resurrection message in that pulpit, and say a word to anybody. The people that have brains read it, going to say, I want to know more about this. Why are you not lining up and asking, can I hand out the university pulpit with that resurrection message? You ought to be proud to give that to anybody. I gave one to John Vandekamp today. I said, you need to see this. Our former attorney general is now the president of the American Bar Association. He used to be president of the Thoroughbred Racing Association. He didn't say no. He put it in his briefcase. He's going to read it. Just leave him around. There's no one in a trash can. Well, some fool will put it there, but the way that pulpit looks now, I doubt people are going to just throw in a trash can. And whether you know it or not, I'm an institution in this town. Very few people don't know who Gene Scott is. The ones that don't, been living on a planet somewhere. You know, you'd be surprised if you handed out in a restaurant how many people would say, well, I watch him. But they don't want to let anybody know it for fear their friends will think they're religious and that they're somehow like people on Channel 40. We didn't want any of those people. I mean, I sat down today with Mark Travis, who's gotten the rights to a stage play. He just got it. He works with part-time as one of my staff members. Mark's gone through, he used to work full-time, and I said, I'm going to force you to go cure your alcohol problem. He's a Jew. Now he's a Christian. He went through rehab and is having success again in the Hollywood world. Worked with David Permit, an old partner. And he was executive producer of Give 'Em Hell, Harry, and Stop the World I Want to Get Off with Sammy Davis Jr. and the first Richard Pryor Live. He just obtained the rights to that old movie. Remember the news movie where the guy said, I've had it, I'm not going to take it anymore. Screamed out the window, and you remember that movie? but he's got the rights to turn it into a stage play. And some very critical people in the Hollywood scene that are among the biggest supporters and longtime friends of Bill Clinton. They're in Philadelphia now because Bill spoke there yesterday, and his wife, and by the way, you know, Bill's getting uglier and his wife's getting prettier. I think that's sort of interesting. But she introduced him at the convention. And this couple said, well, what are you doing, Mark? He said, I work for James Scott.
Huh? Dr. James Scott? We watch him all the time. We like him because he's got that Missouri brogue that we come from southern Missouri. Bill Clinton and his wife watch him all the time.
Had one of the largest music industries in the world today. So tell old Gene I'm watching him every night. We don't have the, you know, the this monopoly of Christianity on the majority religious television, the gang that support one another. Well, I don't need that. They're obviously satisfied with themselves. But the world watches to laugh. They watch me to listen. They just don't want to admit it until they find out the guy they're talking to watches me, because they don't want people to think they've become a religious nut, because most people lump it all into one nutty category. Why aren't you accepted by that crowd? I wouldn't be caught dead with them. I don't want to be accepted with them. They got the emphasis in the wrong place, on you, not on God. All this plant a seed and get rich. All this give to God and get rich. All this give the money where the most souls are being saved. You think I want to be on the committee with Billy Graham? I like Billy Graham, but I don't know what he says when he gets done. There wouldn't be anybody at the Rose Bowl if the pastor didn't take the people there. I admire the man in his 80s. He's stuck to what he does. Simple little, make that trip to the front and everything gets all right. Just simply believe in Jesus. Okay. That's his ministry. I don't want to be on that committee. I don't want any of my people to go to the Rose Bowl. You don't need to go to the Rose Bowl. Just going out of curiosity, you're occupying a seat, stealing air that other people should have. You get all you need at the cathedral. Get out and find some people that aren't going to church and tell them what they're missing. I mean, I got some messages here I wanted to read earlier. One guy says, I quit going to church because there's so much BS coming out of them. Finally, I found somebody that's teaching the truth. I want to stay here. I was sick and stayed home. Turn this on. I ain't going to church anymore. Well or sick, I'm listening to you. There are all kinds of people like that. We're the other side. The religious establishment today is as wrong as the Pharisees were in Jesus' day. Well, he's the greatest teacher in the world, but I can't get past that cigar. They don't smell a lot of smoke in eternity. If I'm the greatest teacher, they obviously don't care about God's word, or they would be begging me to teach where they are. They condemn themselves by that statement. What's the matter with you? There are tens of thousands of people in Los Angeles that want to find out that they don't have to conform to the idiocy of most Christianity to be a Christian. What brought you in? There are tens of thousands of people who want to be freed from the kind of garbage that is crammed at them from the pulpits every Sunday. There are tens of thousands of Christians that want to be a Christian, want to go, I can go to a church where nobody's going to pounce on me, nobody's going to make me do anything, I'll make the decision myself, but I'm going to hear the truth and see the light. And nobody's going to bend me into their shape. What brought you here? I've been here so long, you know, I take it for granted now. Nobody wants to, well, what are you, some kind of freak show that you're one of a kind, that you found something that you want, but nobody else wants it? What are you, somebody that eats raw snails and you don't have the courage to suggest to someone else that this is a cultivated taste? How do anybody know I eat dirt? Remember that golfer that ate dirt? Carried his dirt with him and ate dirt for all the minerals and stuff that it put in his body. Well, he could have got a pill for that and swallowed it. Instead of grinding dirt in his mouth. And I realized it wasn't the kind of dirt you scoop up out of the sand trap, but still dirt. I'm tired of you all. What are you? I'm some kind of secret possession that you've got to hide away and take out every Sunday and look at it and say, look what I got. And don't ever share it with anybody? They call that spiritual masturbation. Try sharing it. It works better. See? There ain't no other church in the world that can get truth like that. Now get on the telephone. Get on the phone. Now, you say, what can I do more? Well, double portion. We're exactly 221 short of the average double portion that we've had over the last several years. Why are you not double portioning? And here is Santa Clara. My double portion and Secret 16 are already called in. I used to leave copies of the pulpit in libraries, nursing homes, and somewhere where there's waiting rooms. I'd like to do that again. May I pay for some copies to do that again? No, you're not to pay for them. We'll give you quantities if you'll just promise to pass them out in a dignified way. And whatever pulpits you used to pass out, there's nothing like this new one on the resurrection. This, it's impossible to offend anybody. So you don't have to pay for them. We'll give them to you. My objection to them being handed out on Sunday morning is I didn't have the chance to tell you. I'll give them to you free if you'll hand them to somebody else after you read them. That's what they're for. Well, it's got a $5 price on it. Good. Then that'll get their attention. Yeah, somebody left this here, and somebody left this $5 thing here. What is this? Hand them out. What's the matter with you? Say to the waitress or the waiter, I'll give you a tip if you'll read this magazine. I'm semi-joking on that, but I want you to hand them out. You don't have to buy them from us. Is that clear?
Yes, sir.
Get this double portion up. The rest of the reservation's in. You don't tell